Today is April 3rd, 2013, and this is the Apple Context Machine episode number 198, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, body double for Samuel L. Jackson.
Well, allow me to retort.
I'm not really sure what that meant. Maybe Mr. Jackson didn't know about my new position. Nonetheless, to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit MacObserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@MacObserver.com.
Jeff, snakes on your plane?
I no longer have snakes on my plane.
That's probably for the best.
I had them. But the snakes on the plane are now ex-snakes.
Ex-snakes.
Yes.
So the act of leaving the plane makes them no longer snakes.
It was the way they left the plane.
Of course. My assumption is they all suffered from post-deceleration shock syndrome.
Exactly. Exactly. That's ridiculous.
Welcome to my world, Brian.
Excellent. You know, we have two subjects for today. Maybe a third one, but let's start with two.
Yeah, starting with two for us makes sense because let's be real. We have a really hard time shutting up.
It's true. It's totally true. So the first one is iOS 7.
Yes.
And the second one is Macworld and some changes at Macworld. And if it's okay with you, I'd like to roll a dice. A die, actually. It's singular. I'd like to roll a die so that we can decide which one will be first.
I think that's awesome. It has been such a long time since we've had a roll of the dice or die on the show.
It's true. All right, so let's make iOS 7 odd, since 7 is an odd number, and Macworld will be even.
Perfect.
All right, and I'm rolling a 20-sided die, and it's 14. That would be an even number, Jeff.
That would be an even number. The Which fact that you keep a 20-sided die on your desk just rocks.
I have a whole set of them here. Just in case D&D breaks out at some point.
Well, you know, you need to be ready. There are certain things that could break out at any time. D&D, song and dance.
Poker.
You need to be ready.
You do. You need to be ready. You do need to be ready for these things. Make mock of me all you will. However, I will be ready. As long as it's one of those things.
And honestly, what else could it be?
That's true enough.
All right. So we have now talked long enough that I completely forgot which
we're doing
topic
Macworld.
We're doing first. Oh, Macworld.
We're going to start off with Macworld and the change in, the partial change in venue and then the change in dates for this show.
Yes. So
2014.
Yeah. So during Macworld, iWorld 2013, the dates that they announced for the 2014 show were February 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, which was a Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, excuse me, which is a big change from the days of,
or would have been.
Yes, would have been a big change for the days of week for the show.
Yes.
And having a show that ran on the weekend and then ended on a Monday felt like it was going to be kind of awkward to me, but I figured, well, you know, we just have to kind of trust that things will work out.
Yeah, that's fine for a home and garden show.
Yeah, but not for a show like this. And the fact that Sunday, so the middle day of the show, was also Super Bowl Sunday, that had me very concerned about what was actually going to happen
right
for the show.
But it turns out none of that was We didn't need to worry about any of that because I can't imagine it was ever the actual plan.
Neither can I. My guess is that those were the last resort dates.
Right. They needed to have some dates posted, and so those were the dates where they were posted. But what happened on, what was that, Monday? April Fool's Day, wasn't it?
Yes. April Fool's Day, word came out that Macworld was moving to March 27th through the 29th.
But it was no joke.
And it was no joke. Okay, so the other part was that it's moving from Moscone West to Moscone North. And you put all of those pieces together, plus the fact that it's April Fool's Day when the news came out. I had to get a hold of Paul Kent and ask him for verification.
Yeah, it seemed like it might have been a not very funny April Fool's joke, but it turned out to be real, and the show is moving to Moscone North and to those dates.
Which I think are much better dates than beginning of February.
I like the show. I'm less sanguine about the move to Moscone North. I would rather I like the way they had built the event to take care of, to take advantage of the multi floors of Moscone West.
That was nice.
Yeah, all that stuff was nice. Having the nice lobbies and with stuff going on in the lobbies that was interesting and entertaining, and I'm going to miss that part. But I guess this is what was necessary to get, or at least it seems like it. This is what was necessary to get the new dates, which are at the end of March, and that is the part that is fantastic.
Yes, and I hadn't really thought about all of the common area stuff that was happening over the past couple of years, and I'm not sure how they'll be able to do that at Moscone North.
Well, you know, there's sort of a lobby area, but it's a good question.
Okay, so the big lobby area that will be the main floor, and that's where registration will have to be. And then you go down a level, below ground level, and then it opens up into the area that can get you to session rooms and to the expo floor.
Right.
And there's not a lot of room there, really, to do community things.
No, but I'm willing to see, wait and see what they do with it. And if this is what it took to get those dates, then it was a trade-off well worth it.
Oh, I agree.
And it, you know, in particular, you know, we've dealt with it for so long that clearly we all took it for granted, but you know, CES and Macworld were often happening almost back to back.
Yeah, you know, it was to the point where I was assuming that for our coverage that we would be leaving at the very beginning of January, traveling to CES, wrapping up at CES in Vegas, getting on an airplane from there, flying to San Francisco to do Macworld, and then after that, flying home. So basically, we'd have the first half of January, we would be at trade shows and conferences.
Right. And as hard as trade shows are to cover, working them is infinitely harder. Working from the standpoint of being on the booth side, being on the vendor side, trying to meet with people like us, that sort of thing. I mean, that stuff is really hard. I remember years ago when people would sometimes pack up the last day of Macworld in order to get to CES, either that or they were coming from CES directly to Macworld.
Yes.
That made for some really tired people, really, is what it.
Yes. And folks. And a lot of companies would be spread thin because instead of having their people back to back at the shows, they would split their teams. So they'd be understaffed for Macworld and CES, but they would be at both shows.
Right. And of course, you know, no work is getting done on the stuff they actually need to be doing, which is making new products and making sales.
Right. And with this change, it makes it easier for companies that want to attend both shows to do so, because now they have a couple months between events.
It's almost a full quarter.
Let's see, beginning of January, end of March. Yeah,
it's more than 2.5 weeks. More than 2.5 months.
Yeah, so you're right. It's almost a full quarter. So that gives some breather room between the shows to recover. If they need to budget more funds for the event to make that happen and to actually conduct their real business in between the shows.
Right, and for some companies... So actually, let's backtrack a little bit. The reality is that Macworld and CES used to be in sort of competition because so much of the consumer electronics industry was either looking to Apple for guidance or reacting to Apple's de facto guidance.
Right. And CES wanted to be in the limelight the whole time.
Right. And Apple, of course, wanted to be able to indirectly control what was being talked about. And the irony is that, actually, that may be a poor use of the word irony, but the reality
is... But we'll
roll
with it.
Thank you. The reality is that even though Apple still doesn't participate in CES and no longer participates at Macworld... Apple still controls the conversation at CES.
They do. And it's just fascinating, I think.
It is.
And especially considering CES, while it does stand for Consumer Electronics Show, is more than Macs, iPhones, iPods, and iPads. Although you wouldn't hardly know it when you're at the show. I mean, you can go to practically any company that's exhibiting at CES, and you'll get a pitch like, well, here we have our new refrigerator, and over here we have this our new microwave ovens that are voice activated, and over here we have our iPhone and iPad cases.
Right. So the two shows, though, no longer compete, even if Apple is still indirectly controlling the message at both of them. That's actually kind of irrelevant to where the shows stand on their own. On the CES side, CES is really geared towards the retail industry and towards retailers picking products that they're going to be selling for the next year and wholesalers picking what they're going to be distributing for the next year. And then, of course... folks want to meet with the press too, show off their new products that way too.
Mm-hmm.
But the public is not invited to that show. It's not a show for the public at all.
Right.
And in contrast, Macworld is not a show for retailers. So there are retailers might be there, but it's as a whole. I think that Macworld is very clearly geared towards consumers.
Oh, very much so. And so much so that you can buy things on the expo floor. You can't do that at CES. They have just days full of sessions that you can attend. And yes, there are sessions at CES, but the focus is
they're not user sessions. They're
vendor and retailer related sessions.
Yeah,
but the focus is
marketing.
Marketing and expo floor. And at Macworld, the focus is learning, community, and then getting to meet with the companies that make the products that you use.
Right, Macworld is a place for companies to make new evangelists, to get more exposure, to get people, you know, either excited about the products or to know about their products, to, you know, be able to use their products, put their products in context, that sort of thing. And then they're also there to meet again with people like us, which is where the overlap is between the two shows.
Right. And Macworld's a friendly show.
Right.
Whereas CES isn't. And I don't mean that CES is a mean or angry show. It's
it's mean and angry, actually. I'll go ahead. If you don't want to say it, I'll say it. Mean and angry. It's just
mean and angry.
Yeah, everybody that's there is just angry that they're there, and it's not a fun show.
No, you can have fun at the show, but it's certainly not a fun show in the way Macworld is. Macworld has the community feel. It's like a reunion in many ways.
I have a way to encapsulate it. At Macworld, people are getting together, and I know that I'm definitely, I definitely look at the show from, I can't help but look at the show from the viewpoint of how I attend it, which is as a press member.
Mm-hmm.
But with both the press, with people that are there in mugs, it's people that we see every year, the people that come to the Cirque du Mac every year. Macworld is a place where old friends come together and make new friends too, and everybody gets together and is happy to see each other. At CES, when people get together, the only reason they're getting together is so they can bitch about how much they hate CES.
Yeah. There,
correct me if I'm wrong.
There's definitely a lot of CES bitching that happens before, during, and after the event. So I guess it'd be safe to say CES is a show that people go to because they have to. Macworld is a show they go to because they want to.
Yeah, that's a really good point too. Which none of this is to deny the importance and relevance of CES. There is being able to have FaceTime with retailers and distributors, those kinds of all those deals that happen along those lines. All that stuff is very important too. I just also happen to think that Macworld is important as well. That
oh, yes.
making those connections with customers for some companies is also important, and for some of those companies, it's even more important than making the retailer deals.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I agree completely. And you can tell the difference in the attitude that companies have at CES compared to Macworld. And it's at CES, when you step in a company's booth, the reason you're there is because business. Whether you're a buyer, a mm-hmm, seller, mm-hmm. or a journalist, it's mm-hmm. business. And at Macworld, when you step in a booth, it could be any number of reasons. So it completely changes the way the exhibitors interact with the people that are showing up at their booths.
Right. Totally, totally true. Which brings us to the point that with Macworld and CES no longer competing, there's no reason for them to be near each other in the calendar.
And no, excuse me, no reason for them to keep pushing their events earlier and earlier to try and leapfrog each other.
Well, CES pretty much won that.
Oh,
can't
sure.
Can't really push that any further. Well, I mean, I guess, you could be there on New Year's Day. But, I mean, CES pretty much won that particular competition. And, as I wrote in my editorial this week, LOL at CES, ha, 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 ha. Congratulations. Enjoy that time frame.
Yeah, because they're stuck there for several years.
Yep, 7 years. Yeah, the next 7 years they're scheduled for essentially the first week of January.
And Macworld, they can be far more nimble. Excuse me, they can be far more nimble, and they can move the show.
Right,
which they just did.
And I like this time frame at the end of March. It's you don't want to put it in the summer because you don't want to be competing with WWDC.
Right.
And you don't want to put it in the fall because at least I don't think. I would actually like to see a fall Macworld. A fall Macworld to me would make the most sense because then it would become a show that was geared towards what's going to be for sale for Christmas.
Sure.
That's what I would like. But
they could do that in, what, like Boston or something?
What, you mean have a second show again?
It's okay. It sounded a lot funnier in my head.
Ah, I get it now. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I was a little slow. We'll just edit that out.
Yeah, we'll just edit that
out. No one needs to hear.
Right.
How flat that felt. So I would like to see a fall show, but the reality is that for whatever reason, no one's asking me. And if it's not going to be a fall show, end of March, early April makes the next most sense. Don't want to compete with WWDC. And I think that this gives, you know, the problem with a January show, the January show makes a lot of sense from the standpoint of dealing with retailers. It's important for retailers to know what they're going to be carrying for the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But it sucks for the vendors because what it means is that in the quarter where they're doing the most business, they have to be focused the most hard. If you'll please forgive that.
I believe the proper phrasing is the most hardest.
The most hardest. They have to concentrate the most hardest on what they're going to be showing in January, the first week of January. And then, you know, it means that the marketing people have to be often working during the week from Christmas to New Year's. And it's just, I don't know, it seems like it's a really inconvenient time for me. It is for me, but to me as well.
Yeah, I don't know when else they could really do the show. Based on the mentality that the retail sector has, I don't know when else they could do the show. It makes sense for the show to be later in the year so that, like you said, buyers can be prepping for the holiday season.
Which on the retail side, they are in January even. Like I said, but you know, the end of January would be a lot better than the first week of January.
Yeah, and CES wasn't always so early in the year.
No, it wasn't. Absolutely not. No, it used to be that Macworld and CES took place sort of in the middle of January.
Right. And
they would jockey back and forth before who was going to go first.
Right. And there would be overlap between the shows
right. For
dates, which that right. was a mess.
So now with this end of March time frame, for Mac developers, especially app makers who were just looking to get FaceTime with new customers and to get some exposure in particular, that time frame should allow them a lot more flexibility on their side to either attend both or in some cases to forgo CES for Macworld. Like, why were there app makers at CES last year? This past year? Does it make any sense to you?
Not to me. To them, I'm sure it did.
I mean, it's one thing if you're showing apps and your physical products too.
Why
not show your, I mean, you know, why not? Why wouldn't you show your software also?
Sure. What if you are a software maker that's looking for OEM deals so that your product gets bundled with other companies' hardware?
Yeah, but those aren't app makers. Those are technology companies.
Sure, but this is all I'm coming up with.
Fair enough. Yeah, that really, really sort of drives. It doesn't make any sense.
I think a lot of companies that chose just CES, like software companies that chose just CES, were doing it because they saw it as a bigger show and maybe weren't thinking about who the target audience is.
Yeah, who's actually going to be there. Be that as it may, I like the new time frame. I like the new schedule. I'll take Moscone North if I have to get it. I think that this should make for a better Macworld. Hopefully, it'll make for a bigger Macworld, and it will certainly make for both vendors and press being less tired for the show, which should also make it better for the people who follow along at home.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think everyone's energy will be higher because people like us aren't still recovering from CES.
Right.
Yeah. So I think it's a good thing. I'm glad the dates were moved, and I'm glad that they moved to March.
Yep. Yes. All right. Which I guess makes us brings us to the odd topic,
which would be iOS 7.
Which is not really all that odd.
No. Well, the number 7's odd. It's also Prime.
It is also Prime.
And that has absolutely no bearing on the news. But, you know,
if we'd assigned specific numbers to both of these topics, say 7 and 3 for March, because it's also Prime, and mm-hmm. March is the third month of the year, and then I rolled a 20-sided die until we hit one of those numbers, I might still be rolling now.
Yeah, and actually, you'd probably be calling me on my phone to get me back to my microphone, because I would have probably wandered off, forgetting that we're actually doing a show.
Our readers, our listeners might have enjoyed that more. They might have enjoyed the sound of dice rolling for 26 minutes more than they would have enjoyed us talking.
It's very possible. And it would certainly bring a new dynamic to our demographic.
All right, well, let's talk about iOS 7, because that is a lot more interesting.
Yes, it is. All right. So, of course, we know Apple is working on iOS 7, and we know they're working on new iPhones. So that's no big revelation. The thing is, what exactly is Apple doing with iOS 7?
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet.
We haven't seen it. We don't have anything other than speculation at this point, and maybe little hints that we can infer a lot out of. For example, Johnny Ive is in charge of interface development now.
And we have seen the new podcast interface, which is the first change that we've had.
Yes, and it did away with the reel-to-reel tape graphic. So it got rid of one of the skeuomorphic elements of the app, and a lot of people have been speculating that with Johnny Ive in charge of interface development for OS X and for iOS, that the skeuomorphic elements that have been creeping in to both would start going away. And they hold up the podcast app as proof that that's actually happening.
Right. And it's long been discussed. We haven't heard Johnny Ive say this directly, but folks who claim to be in the know have long said that Johnny Ive does not like the skeuomorphic thing.
And I can see where he wouldn't.
But Steve Jobs supposedly did. Steve Jobs supposedly loved it.
Which I find really interesting.
I thought they were soulmates.
Yeah. And yet here we have people saying, no, Steve loved it. Well, if Steve hated it, it wouldn't have been in the operating systems.
Right. That is entirely true. But now Steve is gone, and it's time for other people to take charge of the direction. And Steve himself told Tim Cook, do not worry about what I would have done. Don't even think about what I would have done. And we may be seeing some of that coming to fruition. Now, one of the complaints that has been lodged against iOS, especially in the last 6 months, especially when people started piling on Apple, was that it still looks the same as it did in 2007 when the iPhone was introduced.
Right. Now, change for the sake of change, I have issues with that. Change because it improves the product, all right, I'll go with that. And so if Apple does changes or implements changes to iOS with iOS 7 that have a big impact on the overall interface, as long as they're done to improve what the interface is, as opposed to changing it simply because, hey, we need a fresh look.
Right, which is, you know, what Adobe calls Tuesday.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, yeah, you know, it does.
That's really true.
And I think it's really important to note that one of the strengths of OS X and iOS is the consistency.
Yes, I really like the consistency. Now, that said, when iOS first was released, when it was called iPhone OS, it was designed for the iPhone. And it was designed for a 3.5-inch screen.
Mm-hmm.
And the operating system has evolved based on anticipated changes, of course, but then also some market-driven changes. So Apple has taken these features and found ways to shoehorn them in. And in some cases, they do it really well. And in other cases, it just kind of feels like they had to find a place to stick the thing, and so they did.
Right.
And this would be a great opportunity to fix all of that. And that's what I'm hoping is going to happen with iOS 7. And based on the rumors that people that have good insight sources are sharing, it kind of sounds like we're in for a fairly significant change with iOS 7.
Yeah, it seems like it. And I certainly, I'm ready for it myself. I'm ready to see some cool new things. You and I have talked about the importance of Google Now. I've maintained that I think that it's one of the killer apps for Android and a significant competitive
It's a really cool differentiator.
It is a cool differentiator. It's very, very useful. But really, we're talking about effectively what we're talking about is the benefit of widgets and system level widgets in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And I am hoping that we very much get that in iOS 7. I am ready for Apple to bring that sort of change to iOS.
I don't know if I'm ready for that. It depends on how it's implemented.
You know, the ability to push your home button when your screen is still locked and get the time, get some stock quotes, get the temperature, get maybe a headline or a tweet, the kind of things that we see as some of those things, I guess, are seen in notifications. But I want to see that presented in widget form. I do.
Okay. Now, what you just described, I find very compelling. What I don't find compelling is the thing where once you've gotten past your lock screen, now you have all these apps or widgets that are taking up your screen doing other things, and I can't actually go directly to the apps that I want to use.
Well, yeah, they're not going to stop you from doing that.
Well, okay, but you get some of that with Android and with Windows Mobile, and it feels cumbersome.
Cluttered and cumbersome and in the way. That's for sure. And I certainly count on Apple being able to not make those mistakes.
Yes. And
Apple prevents widget apps right now.
Yes, they do.
And that bugs me.
I would like to be able to customize the information that appears on my home screen.
Yes.
Or on my lock screen.
Yes. I think that would make my iPhone that much more usable. And I think that this is an area where Android has the advantage.
Yes, and they had the advantage with Notification Center.
That's true. That's true. Notifications on Android have typically been better than on iOS. I think that iOS 6 went pretty far in correcting some of that delta, but the advantage is still probably, in some ways at least, with Android.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. That said, I'm overall pleased with Apple's Notification Center for iOS.
Mm-hmm. I am too.
And I'm really glad that they added the feature in, because I totally get why there were a lot of people jailbreaking just to add that sort of functionality to their iPhone.
Right, right, right. There a lot of what we see as notifications today got their start in the jailbreak community. And you know, we were talking to, with Dave Hamilton about this earlier today, and he noted that there was a lot of back and forth between the iOS jailbreak community and Android on the notification side. And Apple clearly borrowed from a lot of that work on both sides.
Oh, sure. Which Apple does. I mean, they've always done that. So I'm glad that they copied in a good way. And yeah, I would like to see a widget system for the lock screen, because I know what information I need to see all the time.
Right.
And it would be nice for Apple to give me the control to be able to do that.
Yes.
And I think we're in a position now where we're more likely to have something like that happen. Unlike, do you remember with the original iPad, when Apple changed what the rotation lock button did?
Yes.
And they turned it into just a mute switch.
Yes.
And that was ridiculous.
Yes.
And we had to go through wailing and moaning, gnashing of teeth for a couple months, probably longer, but it far longer than I wanted, before they would put the feature back.
Yeah, allow you to actually decide what you wanted.
Yes, and as I recall, there was talk that was a Steve Jobs thing, taking away the rotation lock feature, because he wanted it. He wanted everything to be the same between the iPhone and the iPad, and that was a bad call. And I'd like to think that those hardcore, it's this way or no way decisions aren't happening anymore, because Tim Cook, he's more willing to listen to other people's ideas, I think.
Right. And, you know, he said when he took over, I can't remember off the top of my head if it was after Steve Jobs died or after Tim Cook took over as CEO, but those were so close together in the first place. One was in November, one was in August. Mm-hmm. But he wrote that letter to employees, and he said nothing is going to change. And then I think it was 2 weeks later when he announced that Apple would be doing charity matching. Oh, so it must have been after he took over, because I remember that Steve Jobs was still alive and chairman.
Yes, you're right.
When Tim Cook announced that, yeah. So, I mean, clearly things have been changing at Apple. And on the one hand, you don't have a man at the top who is dogmatic in his pursuit of what he thinks is right and wrong, and who can, you know, to a degree... to a degree seen in very, very few people, enforce his will. You know, we don't have that anymore. But at the same time, there and that was certainly a strength for Apple. But at the same time, having a man who is willing to gather opinions and make the best decision he can based on the input of others, there are also strengths in that.
Yes, and the fact that Apple has put together a leadership team that has people with good strengths that complement each other, I think that puts Tim Cook in a good position to be able to rely on those people to help him make those important decisions for the product lines.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. And so what we have is we have iOS 7, maybe one would think it would be introduced at WWDC.
That would seem reasonable. And excuse me, we don't know when WWDC is yet, but June-ish.
June-ish is, yeah, it's usually late June or early July, right? It hasn't been as early as May, has it?
I don't think so.
Now, it's possible, though. I wonder if Apple doesn't need more time for iOS 7 because of whatever change in direction Johnny Ive is bringing to the OS.
Well, there has been some talk about that. Of course, nothing confirmed from Apple, just stuff that's coming out from typically reliable sources. And yeah, so I could see where they might want to delay WWDC so they have something fairly solid for iOS that they can show. And some of those rumors are saying that that people are being pulled from the development of the next version of OS 10, so 10.9, to help with the iOS 7 coding. So that they can make up some time.
I'm a huge fan of the Mac. I use my MacBook Air and my Tower hours every day, both of them, different settings, of course. And I'm actually okay with that because Mountain Lion is a very solid OS.
Sure, and I think right now we're in a position Apple's in a position where refreshing iOS should be a higher priority than refreshing OS 10.
Yeah, probably, especially with this change in leadership on the UI side, i.e. Johnny Ive.
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm looking forward to that, and I'm really looking forward to it.
So am I. I think that we probably have some really nice surprises in store when Apple shows us iOS 7. And that will be the big thing to show whether or not everyone's right about Johnny Ive wanting to kill skeuomorphism.
Yeah, and whether or not he's got the chops to actually do it and do it well. You know, I mean, his legacy, right? His reputation has all been built on the industrial side of things.
There's right.
Nothing to say that he knows what he's doing when it comes to a user interface. My guess is that he'll blow us away, but we don't know that yet. The only thing we've seen is the podcast app, and there were a few complaints about the changes in the podcast app.
Sure, but for the most part, people were really happy.
Yeah, and the changes were the folks who actually were sad to see the skeuomorphism go away. Sure. And there are, of course, fans of skeuomorphism. It's interesting because this notion of making digital interfaces look like their analog. Did I just say that?
Yeah, you totally just said analog.
Okay, can we edit that out too?
Yeah,
because I don't want anyone to know. I don't want anyone to know that I said the word analog.
Oh, no problem. I've already told our sound engineers to take care of it.
Excellent. I am very glad that no one will know that I said the word analog.
Yeah, like anyone would ever say antelope.
Like who would do that, right? I mean, that's right. What kind of numbskull? Anyway, the I can't believe I said that. Is the antelope a close relative of the jackalope?
I know they're related. I'm not sure how much genetic code they have in common, but yes, they are related.
All right, so I'm going to try this again. The analog of are there the their analog ancestors for the case of a calendar having the leather stitching to indicate the really nice calendar planner book, a physical book that old people carry. you know, like you and me.
Yeah, good save, Brian.
Who am I kidding? Because, you know, it's not like I've ever really carried a calendar anyway.
Okay, like I used to carry before I had an iPhone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, that leather leather cover, the stitching, the fact that it looks like a book in iBooks, the fact that you know, you open up the book and you get that analog metaphor for the book. You've got the book cover, you've got the pages that turn. You know, all this stuff is very comforting. It immediately lets you know how to use this. Right? And there's value to that.
Now, see, that's the important part, the value. And that's where skeuomorphism is useful, when it gives you a visual cue as to what the thing is that you have is supposed to do. And so in that sense, there are places where skeuomorphism is totally appropriate because it gives you context.
Right.
When you're adding in elements, and I'll go back to the podcast app, the reel-to-reel part, that was completely unnecessary. It was totally gratuitous.
It was in part because, I mean, you know what would have made more sense would have been a cassette player. But I mean, like, who's got a reel-to-reel player? I had a reel-to-reel player growing up, but again, you know, I'm old. I'm in my 40s. I'm not really, I mean, I'm sorry, folks. Listen, if you're older than me, I'm not calling you even older. I'm just saying. I'm thinking of the kids, the kids, the 20 and the, you know, like 20 to 30 years old. Have they ever worked or seen a reel to reel? I doubt it.
Probably not. And many of those people probably don't know what a cassette is because they bought CDs until they stopped buying those and just went with downloads.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's a good point, but your point is, I think, very valid. Is that the reel to reel player on the podcast app was just sort of, you know, gratuitous and unnecessary, and so you've got this notion of making something that is just inviting and just naturally, you know exactly what to do with it. The I think the iBooks example is the absolute best version of that. But what the flip side of that argument is that those are just wasted pixels. They don't add any functionality. You know, we live in a digital world today. You know, who cares how people used to carry around physical books or physical calendars or with their reel-to-reel players and their, you know, their whatnots? Who cares about all that? Let's embrace the new instead of looking back to the old. That's the flip side.
Yes, and the happy medium is, well, that's the part that makes me happy. And that's the trick. How do you keep the skeuomorphic elements that are appropriate and get rid of the ones that aren't? So in some cases, it's very obvious what should go. But in other cases, you know, maybe not. And
ideally, wouldn't you be able to abandon all the skeuomorphism and it replace it with a software interface that is still just as intuitive?
I would like to think so.
I think that the magic antelope has buried that in its lair.
Yeah.
Or something.
That, I mean, that's what they do. It's yeah. Before they start molting. Yes.
But you know, I like reading books in iBooks. I enjoy the iBooks interface a whole lot.
The iBooks interface works for me. And it's one place where the skeuomorphic elements, I think, are done really well. And well, I do read a lot in the Kindle app on my iPad. It doesn't have the feel that the iBooks app has.
No, it's. I mean, for
it
one
feels
thing,
more
it's,
like I'm reading on a screen as opposed to reading yeah. from a book.
Yeah, there's a couple things. I mean, the current Kindle app for iOS, I think, is a lot better than the one it replaced. What was it, like maybe 2 years ago? year and a half ago.
Right.
Right. It's definitely a lot better than that one, but I think that the iBooks app still has the edge, in part because the iBooks app is, of course, making native calls, and Amazon's Kindle app is, at this point, an HTML5 app. So it's not making native calls. And like one of the turning a page, I'd noticed recently, turning a page is more responsive and feels more natural in iBooks to me.
Oh yes, absolutely. And, oh, like I said, it feels more like I'm reading a book as opposed to reading a screen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one place where the skeuomorphic elements, I think, are used wisely.
Really, 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 really well. But I think on the calendar app, even though the analog metaphor is very inviting and very intuitive, I think that the extra screen real estate could be put to better use.
I agree, and it's that's a place where it felt like the skeuomorphic elements were gratuitous, especially because they were added after the fact.
Mm. And even though they were good, it was done well, but it still seemed unnecessary.
Unnecessary, and I think to create that skeuomorphic look, Apple made some compromises that I don't think are very cool. As an example, where's the Today button in Calendar?
Mm.
And the first thing that you have to ask as the person answering the question is, on which device?
Mm. Now, I'm grunting, by the way, because it's not like I actually use Calendar apps and in any way organized, so I have to grunt to sound like I know what I'm talking about, just to be a sounding board for you. Mm.
Okay, so for everyone else that uses a Calendar app, much like I do, take a look. And when you see where the Today button is on your Mac, on your iPad, and on your iPhone, you will see that there's not consistency with this interface.
Right. All right. I'm sorry. Mm.
No, it's okay. We can totally own this pretense, Brian, and you can say right, like you know what
right,
you're talking
right,
about.
Right, right, right.
I'm okay with that.
Mm. Mm. So it's going to be really interesting. It's going to be really interesting. We live in interesting times, and can't wait to see what iOS 7 brings.
Yes, and actually, I'm curious to know what our listeners would like to see in iOS 7.
Ooh, yeah. What would you guys like to see?
Please let us know, and be sure and let Brian know about all the great calendar features we're already using. And,
don't bother.
It's okay to make them up. He won't know.
It's totally true. What is today? Is today like Thursday or something?
No, it's Wednesday.
I should know that because we're recording the Apple Context Machine.
That's right. And that happens on Wednesdays.
Right.
Yeah.
The Apple Annual Report has become the weekly Apple Context Machine once again. Yay, yes.
Go us, and I know we're really confusing people by doing that. I mean, to be fair, people had a schedule. They knew, like, twice a year we'd talk, and now they're having to rearrange their schedules. And I appreciate that everyone's doing that for us.
Yep. Indeed. All right, well, that seems like a really fitting place to call this show to a halt, yeah. To a screeching halt.
I agree. All right, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening, and feel free to follow me on Twitter and on app.net. My handle on both is jgamut.
And you could follow me on Twitter at tmobrian. That's Brian with a Y. But if you want to follow me on app.net, you're going to have to go to Brian Chaffin, which is also with a Y. Did you get that there?
Hold on, I'm taking notes.
You might have to draw a little diagram. It's Brian Chaff on app.net and TM O'Brien on Twitter. Okay. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
As always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Antilog.